Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 200, a super big milestone for us. And I want to thank you guys for listening each week and appreciate those of you that leave ratings and review on iTunes, as that helps us reach as many coaches as we possibly can. I also want to thank our sponsors and specifically Woodway for bringing these episodes to you for free each week. Only partner with brands and products that I believe in, and Woodway is obviously one of those brands. This week, super excited to be joined by Mark Asanovich. This is my biggest mentor in the business. He is the guy that gave me my start and taught me. I use his lessons each and every day. And when I started this podcast, there was three people that I wanted to get on the show. And, you know, it's taken episode 200 because in Mark's eyes, in my eyes, Mark is the epitome of the rubber stamp of approval. And, you know, I wanted to make sure I had a good podcast, one that I was completely proud of before I had him on the show. But Mark, thanks so much, man, for coming on.
It's an honor, Ronnie.
Mark, for those of you, 14 years NFL veteran, you've been pretty much anywhere and everywhere, but I want to take it back, when you first decided to be a strength coach, that origin story. What was it that inspired you to go down this path?
Well, I originally, I was born and raised in Duluth, Minnesota, went to St. Cloud State University, and originally had enrolled in the business school as an accountant, actually was pretty good at that type of stuff, but that was more or less something the parents had kind of pushed me towards. And I knew it, I always wanted to coach. And so what I did is I got an education degree, figuring if I can teach, I can coach. And that's what I did. I got a special education degree and was coaching at a couple high schools, and decided I wanted to do it full time, specifically with the strength training. I was in Red Wing, Minnesota, Red Wing High School, the Wingers, and set up their strength program and applied around to a number of universities and was fortunate to be accepted at The Ohio State University as a grad assistant on Steve Bliss's strength staff. And everything went from there.
You know, you had lots of stops. You mentioned the Wingers there, and I know you were at Anoka, Ohio State. You spent time at the Citadel. And then you started your long stretch with the NFL, with the Vikings and Tampa Bay and Jacksonville. Which one of those experiences really defined you as a coach?
I'd have to say the Buccaneers. And you know as well as I do, being around a guy like Tony Dungy, day in and day out, it can't not affect you. So I saw the way Tony would interact with the players and interact with the coaches and even interact with the janitor. And understanding that not just the people in the locker room are the team, but everybody involved is the team. And that had the biggest impact on me.
Yeah, Coach Dungy was great. And when I was there as an intern, lowly intern, we'd be out, wiping down the bench pads and getting rust off the tree horns and stuff. And Coach would always stop by on his way in and just, knew our names and talked to us. And just a great guy. That kind of level, be that level and then still know the lowly intern was really, really big. And then he was big when my brother passed away. He had reached out as well, which was unbelievable. But Coach, in all those stops, you've made some mistakes. What was maybe the biggest mistake you made and kind of how you learned from it?
Well, it actually, my biggest mistake was at, and I didn't know it at the time, but it was at Red Wing High School. We had a player who came from a very athletic family. His brothers had been moved on from Red Wing to collegiate positions and scholarships. And my calling at that time was to learn everything I could about strength training. So I would show up at every strength training conference in Minnesota. I'd be in the front row taking notes and listening to coaches from Go to a Bowl every year, university, and thinking to myself that if they do it and they win, then I should do it, and kind of went with the mainstream at that time. And so I did a lot of Olympic lifting with the athletes at Red Wing, because that's what everybody was doing. And this particular player had a good career at Red Wing. Then he went on to a scholarship at Mankato, and he was a very good athlete, so he made the kick coverage team. And I went and watched, and he's running down the field, and he totally blows out his knees. Mm-hmm. And I'm figuring out to myself, I did everything I could for this kid. Everything was by the book. It's what everybody else was doing. I just don't understand. This was a non-contact injury, just running down the field. And it kind of gnawed at me. And finally, I just said, well, that's the game. That's football. That's what happens. And then when I went off to Ohio State and I understood the physiology and everything, I called the orthopod for this particular player, and I asked him to send over the x-rays. And in x-rays, you should only see what's ossified,
right?
Which is bone. You should not be able to see ligamentous tissue. And when ligamentous tissue is injured, it calcifies, and you can see it on x-rays. And I could see all his ligamentous tissue and everything like that. And I had to ask myself, to what did I contribute to that? The game contributes to that, but to what did I do in the weight room? So from that standpoint on, my question was, I understand that everything works, but what's the safest way to do it?
Right. Right. That was something that you always would preach to us. It was the four P's. That was prudent, practical, purposeful, and productive. I think you added one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. What was the fifth one?
But it must be back out, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
But those were, I mean, that always resonated with me, because that was exactly what it was. It wasn't what's the most you can do to get the results. It was what's the least amount that you can do to get the same results, you know. And you were the first one, you know, for me, that went back and always talked about stress and all the different levels of stress, whether it be at games or practice or lifestyle or whatever it may be. And that wasn't, I mean, shoot, 20 years ago, that wasn't talked about nearly as much as it is now. But talk a little bit about the four P's and kind of your definition of each of those.
Well, it starts with prudent, and prudent just speaks to safety. And it's like I was just talking about, the research shows that when you introduce a progressive overload to the physiology, you will have a physiological adaptation. So whether you're doing six sets, three sets, one set, two sets, the research shows that all equally work effective if you can get your athletes to work.
Great.
Okay. So the deal is, if everything works, then the next question would be, well, what's the safest way to do it then? So you always have to look for programs and protocols that strengthen kids in the safest manner possible, and then in the most efficient manner possible.
Oh, that's great. What about, so that was, you know, obviously that was, you're prudent, productive, practical, and purposeful. What do you mean by purposeful?
Well, purposeful means that you have to have a purpose behind what you're doing. You're not, my purpose when I was in the NFL was not to train power lifters or Olympic weightlifters. It was to train football players. And you train power lifters and Olympic weightlifters different than you train football players. In football, as in any sport, your main goal is to protect the players from the rigor of sport. And so that means that you have to be involved with training all the muscles of the body. And Whereas in powerlifting, you may just be working on one particular exercise or lift. So you have to have the purpose behind you. You're training for the rigors of sport and for improved performance, and not performance in one particular exercise or lift.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it takes me back to kind of, you know, the very first time that we talked on the phone, you know, and we did the phone interview, and I tell the story, and all the former staff members that are listening, I'm sure they'll laugh, and there's tons of Mark Asanovich stories that I tell for sure, but my favorite is, you know, you called and you know, your first question was, do you want to be a strength coach? And I said, yes, sir, more than anything. And, you know, I think that you thought that I wanted to be a football coach. The second question was, well, if you want to be a strength and conditioning coach, then define strength. And you clicked over, and I looked through pretty much every book that I had. I had all my books on the table, and I'm flipping through everything and trying to find a definition of strength. And I'm pretty sure I gave you the power equation is what I gave, but you hired me anyways. But that taught me an important lesson that you had to define everything that went into your program, and even the most fundamental thing of what is strength as a strength and conditioning coach was something that I was stumbling on, and that this is what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, you know. And then you went on to show me a video that you had taken when I got down there to Tampa, of you going around and visiting various different strength coaches, and you had asked what is strength, and you asked what's the best tool to develop strength, and here's some guys that you're, like you said, that go to a bowl every year, coaches that were stumbling over, you know, being able to define that. You know, talk about, you know, the ability to understand the fundamentals, and, you know, and then turn around and having that clear understanding and being able to have conviction when trying to go in this profession that you're getting pulled by lots of different, you know, media and coaches and parents and all these different things. It's hard to have conviction in a time like this.
Absolutely. But before I get into that, let me tell something to your interns that they don't know. The piece of the other story was, the reason I was calling you is because of your five previous calls to me. Where
relentless and relentless.
Where you showed me your passion and your desire for the field. And so to see the success that you've had in your career, you know, it's no surprise to me to see where you are today and how people are turning to you for the answers. And so really proud of what you've been able to do.
Appreciate that, Coach.
As far as the fundamentals go, strength training is all about the fundamentals. It doesn't go beyond the fundamentals. So in order to develop something, you first have to define it. Before you can understand how to strength train people, you first have to understand what strength is. And so when you come to that definition, and you'll be guided by that definition, whether or not you consciously make that decision or not. But I've always used the definition of strength as being force production. When a muscle contracts, it produces force. So my job then was to increase the force potentials of all our players. And so how do you do that? Well, you impose a demand on the body, and so much demand that you go beyond its normal capabilities and cause a physiological adaptation. This is called overload. So there's a lot of ways that you can introduce overloads to individuals. But like I say, the premise and the most basic thing is how you introduce that overload has to be safe physiologically and orthopedically.
Mm. Yeah, ever since, you know, when I came in, I had trained mostly Olympic lifting and traditional programs. Trained with Istvan Dvorak, and you know, I came down, and that was what my idea of strength and conditioning was. And so initially I really struggled because you were, you know, a high intensity philosophy based strength coach. I mean, obviously you had taken it and adapted it to your situation, but here were these polar ends of methodology, I guess. And what I saw was both worked, you know, both worked in different ways, you know, and so it was really important for me in my process as a coach to see that, because it opened my eyes to now there's not just one way of doing thing. And what I've used ever since then is that I'm a principle based strength coach, not a philosophy based strength coach. And so you and I, me and Charles Poliquin and Leo Totten and whoever else, we can have a conversation about overload and progression. We might not always agree on it, but we can have a conversation about that. And I think that that's when you open your mind and you allow yourself to have those types of conversations. That's when you can identify the good that exists, because there is tons of good, but there's also, you know, some things where you can identify and really understand what the bad is so that you can explain it in your programs. And I think that you were you're such a great example of that, because I don't know if you remember, but there was one time when you brought, I'd completely converted, essentially. I went from completely being Olympic lifting to completely being high intensity training. And there was a coach from Virginia that came down and I was getting in an argument with him at one of our camp situations and just getting destroyed. He'd had maybe 10 years, my senior, on experience, and he was destroying me. And you brought us both in and went through a presentation where you kind of put him in his place. And then when he walked out the door, you sat me back down and you kind of, you know, had me flip the roles. And then you put me in my place from the other perspective, you know, and it was really eye opening to me, because it's all interpreting this information. But then, like you said, going back to what is the safest and how do we protect the athletes? And one of the major areas right now is with our athletes, especially playing combat and collision sports and gladiator sports, is training the neck, you know, and protecting the athletes, you know, from what's the most catastrophic injury in football or sport is, you know, being a quadriplegic or paraplegic. And people kind of skirt past that sometimes, you know, they think of it just as any other muscle, and that they're going to train, you know, as long as they address it, they've protected the athlete. But you and I were talking off camera about, it's not necessarily training the neck as opposed to it is protecting the brain. And there's a difference there. Talk about why you're so passionate about this area, and what are some of the things that coaches need to know that maybe they don't.
Well, I think there's a lot of issues that surround that, and I think that, you know, spinal cord injury, concussion, those two words have never evoked so much fear and frustration in coaches now more than ever. But there's reasons for that. One of the things is, even though we are more aware about concussions, it's still an invisible injury.
Right.
Because you can't see the damage in the brain itself, it's still minimized and marginalized. But this is your brain. This is your soul identity. It's the way you experience the world. It's how you love your wife and your kids and it's everything. When you damage that, it's not like damaging the hamstring. The hamstring will heal. The brain won't. So the brain, unlike muscle tissue, you can't overload the brain to make it stronger to protect itself. The only thing you can do is strengthen the muscles around it to protect it. You see, the brain is the most vulnerable organ in the body, because the head is the most vulnerable anatomical attachment because of the mobile neck that it attaches to the body with. So what the preponderance of research is now showing is, if we can strengthen the neck, which makes it larger and more rigid, we can change the movement of the head on impact. And if we can slow down the movement, the acceleration and deacceleration that's caused with concussion pathologies, we can minimize concussions, but more importantly, Ronnie, minimize subconcussions. Because the research now is showing that the difference between a concussion and a subconcussion is, a concussion basically is going to be anything over 80 Gs that damages the brain so severely that you're going to have symptoms with it. Subconcussions where the exact threshold is, we don't know. They're saying 15 Gs up. But those are impacts that still damage the brain. There's still damage, but it's not enough to cause symptoms. The brain is still damaged. So there's not a test, there's not a trainer that can tell you you're subconcussed. Mm-hmm. You don't know you're subconcussed. But it's that those little accumulated subconcussive damages over an extended period of time that will cause more damage and later life neurodegenerative diseases than the one or two or three concussions you have through your career.
Sure.
So if we can strengthen the neck and help that region absorb the force that's going to the brain and slow down the head, we can minimize the damage that's going to the brain.
So for the strength coaches that are out there, I mean, most strength coaches I know address the neck in some capacity, the neck and traps, maybe they're doing, flexion, extension, lateral flexion, and they're feeling like they're doing everything they can do. Are they doing everything they can do, or should they be doing more?
Well, you mentioned that most people have four-way necks in their weight room. At least I'm hoping they do. So if they're doing lateral flexion right and left, flexion, extension, they're doing shrugs, and they're building up the lats and the rhomboids and the what most people are calling the posterior chain right now in that area along the cervical spine and the lumbar spine. They're doing everything they can to protect that area. There's an area though that I've just learned about, the actual capitis muscles of the head, that are real important. They are actually the muscles that hold the head onto the cervical spine. And a lot of times people will ask me, well, how important are they? Well, again, they're the muscles that attach your head to your spine.
Yeah, they're pretty important.
I live in Minneapolis, and last year we had an auto accident on one of our major highways. A mother of four hit some ice and was spinning, and everybody slows down until she comes out of her spin. Well, there was a teenager that was texting that didn't see the cars in front of him slowing down. So when he impacted this this lady who had slowed down for this car that was spinning out, the impact was so violent that when it whipped her head decapitated. Yeah. Now, basically what happened is those little cervical muscles ruptured, separating her skull cap from her cervical spine, killing her instantly. But it's not like most decapitation. It was called an inferior decapitation, meaning that the fascia and the skin was still holding the head on. Mm. But what was interesting is when I talked to the paramedic that was on the scene, he said inferior decapitation is actually quite common with children who have the large head-to-body ratio unbalances and women who have weaker necks. So when you talk about those little cervical muscles or the capitis muscles that control the movement of the head, they're very important and they need to be trained as well.
So I know that you've created a piece of equipment that addresses that, but what can they be doing to train those capitis muscles?
Well, it's no rocket science to train muscle. You just put resistance against the function of the muscle.
Right.
So the head has 10 degrees of motion, of flexion, and 25 degrees of extension. So the reason I created the machine was so that you wouldn't have to have a goniometer to say, okay, stop. It actually puts a range limiter on the machine. So it stops you at 10 and it stops you at 25. And in stopping there too, you can flex the muscle in its fully contracted position to recruit as many fibers as possible to optimally develop it.
That's great. Yeah, I think that it's one of those. What do you think? Let me ask you this. What do you think strength coaches, I mean, obviously this is something that it goes back to one of the other things that I always use that you would say is that, it's the Hippocratic Oath, right? Do no harm, mm-hmm. As strength coaches, we have an obligation to do no harm first as well. And what, you know, what should we be doing as a strength and conditioning community to try to be, you know, spreading the word to anybody and everybody that would listen on, you know, protecting the brain and training the neck and traps?
Well, it's interesting. I was at a clinic in California later this year, and a strength coach from a FBS school came up to me and said, you know, I just listened to your presentation, and you got to understand, I got my platform complexes I got to get through. I've got my bench complexes. I've got my squat complexes I got to get through. Now you're throwing this neck stuff at me. You got to understand, I got 20 hours with these kids a week. I don't have time to do all that.
Right.
And what I told him was, you don't get it. Like a lot of people, you don't get it. And what we need to have is a paradigm shift in our thinking. We're so inundated with, we want to increase these kids' performances, and we do, but we first have to protect them.
Right.
And my whole platform is, if we are going to protect the integrity of sport, we have to protect those who play the sport. So I said, what you don't get is all those things you talked about has to first evolve and center around first protecting the most important organ on the body, which is the brain.
Right.
All those other complexes have to fit around that. It's not how do I fit the head and neck training into the protocol. It's how do you fit everything else in around it.
Right. It did.
And yeah. So until we understand that, you know, that's the message that needs to get out.
No, I agree.
Is we need to protect these kids.
Dave Ramsey, I don't know if you've read any of his stuff, but, you know, it's a financial guru out there, you know, and he talks about paying yourself first, you know, before you start to go pay other people and making sure you're addressing that. And it's the same thing, same approach here, is that you got to pay the, you know, what's going to protect the athlete first before you go to try to enhance performance on top of that. And I couldn't agree with you more. What's the proper protocol? I mean, you've been in a football environment, you've been at the highest level, you know, you've also been there when it's, you know, Coach Dungy or whoever. And Coach Dungy wasn't necessarily this way, but you've been there when coaches have come downstairs and say, you got 40 minutes for a lift, coach. You know, how do you work it in?
Well, again, it's always the first thing we do. Mm-hmm. You know, and the protocol takes what, 4 to 6 minutes to do, 5 to 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a coach that says, okay, there's lateral flexion, those are two exercises, there's extension, there's flexion, there's the traps, you know, there's all these exercises, but you train athletes over the week too. So let's say one day you bring them in and you do the flexion for the cervical muscles, then you could do the nod for the head flexors. Next day you bring them in, they could do the lateral flexion right, lateral flexion left. Next day they come in, you could get the extensors of the head and the cervical spine. So there's ways of taking that protocol and divvying it up over your training week. There, it doesn't take a lot of time.
That's exactly, I can be a testament to that. It's the very first thing we learned was how to do manual net, you know, when we were there. And I think it goes back to teaching the fundamentals as well, and teaching your athletes that this is something that's going to protect them. And we never used core lifts. We never used auxiliary lifts because it kind of placed a lack of importance on lifts like neck training, because, you used to do this to us, and I've done it since to all the staffs that I've worked with, that what's the most important exercise in football. And I would, you know, of course people would say squat and bench and power clean, and it's training the neck because it's the most catastrophic injury. So going back to the fundamentals and teaching your athletes how to properly do manual resistance if you don't have neck pieces all throughout the weight room, or understanding what a proper rep is with a 2 second concentric and a 4 second eccentric contraction, you know, those are things that are going to make it so that you can integrate that program into your program, or you can integrate those exercises into your program in the most efficient way. You know, you taught me that for sure. And I'm always appreciative of that. And I think it's also something where, unless you've gone through it, where somebody's had a neck injury, you don't really fully understand. And speaking from somebody that's had experience with that, or people that have known, you don't want to go through that. You know, you'd rather not go through that. So let's just protect on the front end throughout. Mm-hmm. Coach, you've been in the profession for a long time. You know, you're my biggest mentor in it. What does a coach like me need to be thinking about 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road as I age in this profession?
I think we hit on it earlier, and that is we need to take the stuff that we talk about, the physiology of strength training, it's not personal. It's professional. I mean, I've been at clinics where coaches get emotional and yelling and angry and everything like that. You know, I can think of a lot of things to yell and get angry about. You know, when you talk about what's going on in Afghanistan and we're talking about barbells and dumbbells here. And I think people that have been, like we were talking about, that are either black and white or polarized on one side or polarized high intensity on one side and this other group on the other side, those people have torn this industry apart. We need to come together and dialogue these issues and, you know, take a look at the research and what is it saying and how does this best fit into your program, coach, given to your equipment and the kids you have, and how does this best fit somebody else's? We go off to clinics and we talk about we do this set and rep scheme and we do this and we do that. Well, to somebody who doesn't maybe have that equipment available to them and stuff like that, it's not practical. But what is practical is what you just said. When a coach says, hey, we gotta get 100 guys through safely in 40 minutes through a total body workout, how are you going to do that, coach?
Right.
And we don't talk about how you administer it safely and productively enough. And we don't talk how do you do it safely enough. And I think those are the issues that we really need to take a look at, rather than saying, I disagree with you and I disagree with you. And disagreement, that's good because that causes dialogue.
Agreed.
But we can agree to disagree.
You do it professionally, yeah.
Yeah, and we can agree. We can disagree in an agreeable manner. Yeah. So. So I think you know, we just need to come together as, and I think we are more and more coming together as a profession rather than being more polarized, which we have been in the past.
Do you have maybe one tactic or idea of how best to be able to do that?
I think what you're doing here right now is putting together a forum for coaches where they can hear different ideas and opinions. And I, like I say, the more dialogue, the more venues we have to do that, the better. And I think going to clinics, showing up at weight rooms, you and I have both done that. That's, you know, you can listen to a coach at a clinic, but if you really want to see what's going on, show up at his facility, you know, call him, make an appointment, say, hey, listen, I'm a young guy. Wanting to learn, can I come into your facility and talk? And then the professionals at the same time should be open to that. I work for a coach at Ohio State that always talked about pain forward. And he said pain forward is about paying back the coaches that helped you along the road. But usually by the time you want to say thank you to them, they're gone. So your thank you to them is helping the other coaches come up through the ranks.
Great. I love that. I'm going to use that one. I agree with you. I mean, you taught me that site visits were probably the most important thing. It's one of the number one assignments that I have our interns do, because you get a chance to go see where the rubber meets the road. And if they're really doing what they say they're doing, and the art of it is really, you know, is really what stands out. But my idea, and I think that, I think for us to really evolve as a profession, is that we need to create a degree seeking program in strength and conditioning, not biology, not exercise science, not kinesiology, a degree in strength and conditioning, where we're forced to put out research and interpret research and practically apply it. And those things, that's what our generation, in my opinion, needs to do to try to change that. Because until there is this kind of a degree program where people, I mean, there's obviously disagreements within academics, but for the most part, people start to kind of align because there's just a more research out there that you can see and discuss. But well, Coach, we end the show with some resources here, and we can absolutely go all day. And this has been a big treat for me for sure. But what's the best piece of coaching advice you've ever received?
That's a good question. I think the biggest coaching advice I got was probably when I was at Ohio State, and a coach named Woody Hayes. I had a chance to meet I was on Earl Bruce's staff, but Woody was still involved in the program, and I'd always followed him from Minnesota. And when I went over to Ohio State, first time on campus, I drove to the ROTC building where Woody's office was, and I wanted to introduce myself as working in the football program. And so I went up and introduced myself to him, and he sat down and he talked to me. And the first thing out of this great coach's mouth was, "You take care of those kids." And I kind of said, "Oh, yeah, okay." But then he looked me in the eye and he said again, "Take care of your kids.
It's awesome.
There's somebody else's son. They are somebody else's daughter. They've given them to you. You take care of it. That's a sacred thing." And for a young guy coming in, I mean, that's what you need to know. They aren't guinea pigs. They are somebody else's sons and daughters who parents love them. And now they've entrusted their care to you.
That was, that was before, I think before you had the kids at Tampa, or maybe you just had your first, but I remember you always saying, if you had a kid and somebody treated them and did this, then you'd go punch them in the face. And that kind of always, that kind of always resonated with me until I had my own kids. But you're absolutely right. You know, once you have your own kids and you think about some of the crazy things that people do and the trust that you put in them, it's tremendous, and so the coaches listening, they all need to recognize that as well. Give us a book, app, website recommendation.
Well, I'll give you a book. I just read a couple months ago a book called Play Hard, Die Young. The book was written by Dr. Bennett Amalo. He was the one who coined the term chronic traumatic encephalopathy. He was the pathologist that did the analyze the brains of Mike Webster, yep, Terry Long, and those guys. And he wrote a outstanding book. And the thing I liked about it is that he did it in a very professional manner, very scientific manner, not pointing fingers, anything like that. I think it's a good read for parents, coaches, athletes. Good book.
You had a website as well, I think. You said no app, but you had a website. It was like protectthebrain.org or something, I think.
Protectthebrain.org. It's his website. Dr. Amalo and Dr. Julian Bales out of West Virginia. Two very high neurosurgeons, that neuropathologists that are in tune with this problem. Mm.
Coach, where should everybody go to stay up with what you have going on?
Well, I've got a tweet website. It's Coach A 6262, and I have a website, CoachAProTraining.com. And there's some information I posted on those sites.
Well, Coach, this is, like I said, this is a treat for me, and I know I've said it to you many times about how much I appreciate the role you've not only played in my life way back when, but you've continued to play throughout, and you've definitely been the gold, the gold standard for me to try to live up to and try to aspire to be, because I mean, you've shaped not only my own career, but I mean, many other interns and coaches that have come through your program, and just continue to do it the right way. So thanks so much for everything you've done for me and you've done for the profession, and just appreciate you for coming on the show as well, Coach.
Well, it's an honor to be on your 200 show. I mean, that's certainly a credit to you and to your audience. And you know, you give me a lot more credit than I deserve because you are a fantastic coach and more than that, a fantastic person and husband. So it's kind of who I look to now, your podcast and stuff like that. So it's really an honor and a pleasure to be on your show.
Thanks, Coach.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.